Hi, y'all. We are back, and I've been promising you an episode on this topic, which is all about homeschooling today. I have Malia Waller on the podcast. She is a homeschool mentor, but what's really cool about her story, and she's homeschooling herself. We're going to talk through that. But what I love about this conversation that's about to happen, she's also a special education teacher and has worked in the special education system. So I think that will be really important to thinking about gearing homeschooling to your autistic child. And then additionally, she's trained as a BCBA, a board certified behavior analyst, no longer practicing, but I think some of her training comes into play. Although I'll be candid, right off the top of the episode, she and I have had candid conversations about this and how she really, in her homeschooling approaches, takes a very neurodivergent affirming approach. So I'm sure you will absolutely see that integrated into today's episode.
Welcome to a parenting space actually designed for you, where you can get answers about navigating a life that includes autism. I'm Dr. Tay, a licensed child psychologist and parental coach specializing in neurodivergent affirming care. I have supported hundreds of autistic children and their families and have been in the autism field for over a decade. And I know firsthand the impact autism can have. I was 12 years old when my little brother was diagnosed and my family had to learn how to navigate the autism journey. It wasn't always easy. 2 decades later, I now create resources and services I wish my family had, including this podcast, and I developed the whole family approach. On this podcast, of course, we will talk about autism, but we will also talk about your personal growth and well-being as a parent, supporting your non-autistic children, and sharing personal stories of other families so you know you're not alone. Quick disclaimer before we jump into today's episode. Anything shared on this podcast should not be considered clinical advice, and you should consult with your team of medical, mental health, and developmental providers if you need support.
So, Malia, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to keep this conversation going about homeschooling and how my background and time spent in the special education space has really prepared me for supporting others in homeschooling as well.
Absolutely. Because I know in our conversations behind the scenes, you talked about you are working with a lot of families that have neurodivergent learners.
Yes, I am. I am. So when I was working in the public school system where I am in Northern Virginia, I was supporting classrooms from preschool through high school with assistive technology support at the time that I left. And so when I decided to come home and homeschool my own son, I was really starting to miss that piece of collaborating with others who are on support teams for students and helping them thrive. And so I thought about how I could use my background and take that and spin it to support the homeschool space. And so that's what I've done over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So how did you decide you go from being a teacher versus then transitioning to homeschooling your son? Like, how did that decision come into play?
So full transparency, the pandemic, okay. My son was due to start kindergarten in 2020. And at that point, the county that we live in hadn't decided whether they were going virtual or going back into buildings in the fall. And so all of that was a lot. I was still working as a teacher at that time. So I was still connected on the inside, if you will. And it was like everything was up in the air and it just felt like super overwhelming. But also knowing my own child, I knew that sitting behind a computer screen for 5 hours wasn't going to be the best way for him to learn and grow. And it was probably honestly going to be more detrimental than beneficial. So that was the major push to start homeschooling. But if I'm being honest, I'd been thinking about it for longer than that, because I knew that I wanted my kids to have the experience of being able to really learn through play as a younger aged elementary school student. And that's not really the reality of public schools right now. So I really wanted that for them. And so this, in a weird way, the stars aligned, even though it was like not a positive event that was happening for us. And that led us to homeschooling. And we've been there ever since.
Yeah. I feel like the pandemic was super rough in so many ways, but there were some like silver linings. I know in the mental health field, it totally changed the way we provided care. And yes. I hear a lot of families too, that it really just helped to be that momentum of starting the homeschooling process and then just stay in the course. I'm curious, when you say learn through play, What does that mean?
So I really love to make learning hands-on. So my kids are very active. They love to use their whole body to explore their spaces and be moving constantly. And so we do a lot of taking the things that we find in our curriculum and making them more hands-on. And so by learning through play in this example, I mean something like taking our math work outside and using chalk and drawing, laying on our tummies and drawing our math problems out on the sidewalk. Or for reading, putting reading words out on cards all over the floor and playing floor is lava and jumping to the words that we're reading. So like really making it a full body experience when we're getting into teaching and learning together.
Where did you like get this? Because you were saying you were thinking about it. So where were you like, this feels like how I want to teach my kids? Like what inspired this type of approach for you?
I think it really has to do with my kids and who they are and what they're drawn to and following that lead. And I think honestly, that goes back to me as a teacher. Like my whole, when I was in the classroom, I taught in the preschool autism classroom in our county. And I had 6 students, I had 2 paraeducators, and my whole job, right, was to teach the kids where they were and to get on their level and be with them, not to force them into another box, to not to make them fit a mold, but help them grow individually. And so I think I've always taken that approach to teaching. And part of that may be, and I know we've talked about this before as well, that I have a sibling with a disability. So I grew up that way, right? Modifying the environment and the activities to fit the needs of the person rather than trying to make the person fit into the environment. Yeah. And that's always been how my brain has worked as a teacher. And so I think that just transitioned into my own kids and watching them. And I'll be honest, I tried to start homeschooling with a circle time and a strict schedule. And this is how the school day is going to work. And we're going to break for lunch at 11. And it was a disaster for all of us. Like, I love a good routine. And the teacher mind that I had was like, this is how a day is supposed to work. But it didn't take long for that to not be true for our family.
And I think so many parents hear homeschooling and that's what they're thinking is duplicating what is created in an educational setting, but there's right. So many different ways you can take homeschooling.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's the number one thing that I love to tell families is that homeschooling doesn't have to look like public school. You don't have to be working 7.5 hours a day sitting at a table. In fact, like that's the whole reason most of us homeschool is so that we don't have to do that, right? But I think it's unique and individualized to every family and their needs and their personalities and their learning styles. There are absolutely families who sit down and have more of a public school approach to their homeschool because that's how they enjoy learning together.
Yeah.
And then there are families who are totally following kids' leads and diving more into this unschooling approach to homeschooling where that's totally child-led and interest-based. And I think there's like a whole spectrum, right, in between of all the different types of homeschooling and all the different educational philosophies. And you just have to find where you fit based on your values and how your family likes to learn.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think it's really interesting, just to real quick connect this back because it's coming to my brain. I feel like what you're describing doesn't, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but probably doesn't map on to how you were trained as a BCBA though. Do you think that?
I think there's pieces of it that can still fit. I think there's some of the basic principles of being clear in your communication that apply, but it doesn't have to be as rigid, I think, as some people take it to be. Does that make sense?
Totally. I think it is possible to, yeah, adapt in that way.
Yeah.
I guess I'm more wondering about just the traditional schooling that you went through. Would you say that it was like very child-led in this way and play-based and all of that?
You know what? I think it wasn't totally, but I think I broke the mold a little bit in that and my approach to teaching. I feel like while I did adhere to some of the things that they teach you with applied behavior analysis, I also had other ways of watching what the kids were doing and following their lead instead of making it all about me and telling them to do something. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think one of the ways I talk about this a lot on the podcast in terms of like therapeutic approaches, but also what's coming to mind mapping onto homeschooling, this continuum you're talking about, I feel like mimicking a public education setting is more adult-led. And then we have all the way down to full unschooling is very child-led. And then there's elements in between of each of these. I don't know. Does that map on, do you feel like? Or
yeah, I think it does. I think it's said that the unschooling educational philosophy is totally reliant on the child and following their curiosity. I think there's still a piece of adult setting boundaries for safety and providing materials and all that stuff. So there's still involvement. I think sometimes people hear unschooling and they're like mortified and thinking Lord of the Flies, kids are doing whatever they want. And I think that needs to be said that unschooling has gotten this bad vibe, I think, from some groups of people who just haven't really understood what it looks like, or maybe have a different approach and aren't being super flexible in their thinking.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting though, is like child-led therapy still has all of those same boundaries at the same point around safety. I think that reach all the time is yes, there still do need to be boundaries, right? And there's ways in which we're directing and supporting and all of that. So I think it's so interesting and such a parallel, but interesting you say that home or unschooling has gotten a bad rap, because I feel like I'm hearing about it a ton, right? Yeah. So because of autistic kids with the PDA profile, that we're hearing about it more and more as a way to reduce autistic burnout. So I guess for those that have never heard unschooling, let's define that first before we dive in further to this topic.
It just really relies on a child's interests and being a guide, taking a step back and letting them have autonomy in choosing what they're learning. And maybe that's all interest led. And maybe I'm thinking of my own child, like right now we're really into ice hockey. So maybe we're like doing a deep dive into ice hockey, how it works. And that can lend itself to so many educational things, right? You're doing research by either searching on the internet for information about ice hockey or checking out books at the library, going to a hockey game as a field trip, learning about the physics that happens when you hit the puck with the hockey stick. There are so many ways and things that you can learn about one topic that really pull from every other area of learning. And I think that sometimes as adults, we forget how involved all of that really is when we're worried about a negative side of hyperfixating on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. But it's also, I think, too, contrary to how traditional school settings are, you know, where it's very structured. We're doing math right now and we're prepping you likely for this standardized test, which if kids thrive in the public school setting, amazing, but there's many kids that they don't learn in that way because they're not regulated and engaged in those environments.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So do you get parents that you work with and you mentor that though, like worry of, okay, we can follow their lead, we can integrate things, but are they hitting these certain benchmarks that they need to? And then also, I guess that ties to this. I know every state is different,
yes,
but how do you navigate kind of some of those benchmarks? I think that you're required by law to hit depending on the state you live in. Is that accurate?
It is accurate. And that piece you keep saying, depending on the state you live in, that's the part that makes it tricky, right? Because every state has different rules and regulations. Some require that you hit certain subjects and you do certain amounts of hours in each subject. Some have no rules or regulations at all. Some require annual testing. Some require testing every few years. Some let you have an evaluation done. So it really just depends on what state you're in. But I do think, to answer your question, there are a number of parents who are drawn to unschooling, but then they're like, I feel like I need a curriculum so that I know that I'm touching everything. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I love to coach people through is if they feel that need, that they need a curriculum, there are lots of ways that you can look up what standards are being hit in public schools or in your state. So you can go to your education board for your state and they will list all of the standards that they're working on by grade level and subject. You can also go to IXL.com is a great educational website, and they have all the standards listed out there. And that's just one way to look at it. And you can see if you're hitting and targeting certain skills. Again, I think in Virginia where I live, there are no, you have to do this and this when they're 9 years old as a homeschooler. And we're lucky to have that flexibility here, because my approach has always been, I'm going to do and follow what my kids are enjoying learning. But also, I use curriculum. I'll be honest and say that I'm not a full unschooler. I'm more of what you would call an eclectic homeschooler. So I pull from different styles. And I only use curriculum for math and reading unless my kids ask for a curriculum in another area. So we've actually been having a conversation in our house about American history and how we know we want to study that, but what approach do we want to take? So I think that's another important thing to note, is that you have the ability to bring your kids into this conversation and give them some autonomy and let them have choices. That is the true benefit of homeschooling, whether you choose the unschooling approach and it's totally child-led, or you choose other approaches, you can still let them be a part of that conversation. And that gives them that autonomy as well, right?
Yeah. So, okay, question with that, because I mean, this makes so much sense. And to be really forthcoming, early on in my clinical training, I always thought pretty negatively of homeschooling, because I was like, no, there's so many supports in the public school system and you need to be around peers. And I will say, I think it was the pandemic that truly started to shift my mindset, as well as learning about PDA. And I'm seeing how many PDAers are really struggling to go to school right now. But yeah, one thing that does pop into my brain is, okay, if you're using some curriculum, but if you are unschooling, what if you're like, my kid needs to learn to add at some point? Like that is like a life skill. They need, by the time they become an adult, they need to learn to add. What if that's not naturally coming in? Is it just like trusting the process of, okay, they might not be interested right now, but they will be eventually and we'll figure it out? Or how do you mentor parents in some of those worries and then like knowing when the time is to push versus the time to continue to follow their lead?
Yeah, I think for me, it's about making sure you're exposing them to those things out in the real world. So not necessarily sitting down and let's add 4 + 4 and write the number 8 on this piece of paper, because that means we're doing that skill or targeting that skill and learning it, but go out to the grocery store and add up. We have 4 people and we each need 2 apples. How many apples do we need to buy for this week for our grocery bill? Get out into the real world and do that real life stuff. And you'll be surprised at how many things like math facts and reading skills and all of that, that they're using. And it's more of a natural learning environment. So they're going to be invested in helping you navigate and figure all that out. And I think for my kids in particular, they really love to be in charge of stuff like that when we get to go out, because that's fun for kids, right? To be able to dictate and make choices and do all those things. And kids love to get out their money and pay at the end. So if you're paying in cash, what a great learning experience out in the natural world. So all of that kind of, but I think if it's up to the parent as well, and you know your child best, and if you think that they would be willing to learn in other ways, then add those in. We love board games in our house. That's a great way to target math skills as well. There are so many amazing board games out right now for math skills and reading skills that are super fun. So if you have a kid who loves to play games and buys into that, then I think game schooling is a super fun way to approach as well.
Game schooling? That's
It's a thing. You play board games all day and you learn through board games.
Okay, let's go through then. Actually, this leads in perfectly. I want to call them buzzwords, but like different types of homeschooling that parents might hear about. We talked about unschooling, but what are some either other curriculums or approaches that parents can look into?
Real quick, just a brief interruption, because I want you to know you don't have to navigate this journey alone. If you're in a place where you have concerns about your child's development, you've been on the search for a therapist that provides evidence-informed neurodivergent affirming care, or you're needing more support as a parent, the whole family approach may be a good fit for you. Autism doesn't just impact your child's life, so you deserve care that works for your child and your whole family. Head to the link in the show notes to schedule a complimentary call where we can chat about your unique circumstances. We can help you decide if Dr. Tay, concierge clinical care, would be a good fit for your family. And if not, we will provide you resources for your next best steps.
Yeah, so I think other really popular methods of homeschooling are Montessori. And they have private schools that also do Montessori style learning. Charlotte Mason is another buzzword. That's a lot of reading beautiful books and getting out into nature. And this is very surface level. So But yeah, there's all sorts of kind of educational theorists, if you will, and philosophies that people follow for homeschooling. I think game schooling is another fun one that kind of borders on unschooling, but it's has the board game as the center of their learning. And then there's just a mix of it all, the eclectic, which is what I call myself. We love to read beautiful books like the Charlotte Mason style, and I love to set out materials and see what my kids do with them, like the Montessori approach. I like to pull from all the different areas, and then I like to just follow my kids' lead sometimes and see what happens. But I will say, for me, when curriculum starts to get, I don't want to use the word boring, and I don't want to use the word controversial, so difficult, I guess, for my son and I, then we just drop the curriculum and we do fun things like board games and lean more towards the game schooling kind of side of things and the natural approach.
That makes sense. So if parents are wanting, they're like, okay, I'm feeling this, I want to learn more. Are there any great resources to learn about like different theories of homeschooling or different curriculums or approaches?
Yeah, I think Pam Barnhill has a great book that kind of walks you through all of the different styles of homeschooling and like navigating, setting up your rhythm and routine for your specific family's needs. There's a great resource called KathyDuffyReviews.com, which is all about different homeschooling curriculums, and it lumps them into learning styles or like whether they're secular or religious based. So it can help you navigate that and pick things that might appeal to your family. And then I think honestly, like the best way to really dive into homeschooling is to just rip the Band-Aid off and give it a go and try not to be hyper-focused on all of the curriculum and all of the things, because I think the most important thing is going to be establishing your relationship with your child and making sure that is sound so that you can work together and learn together and grow together. So I really feel like the biggest component and the best thing you can do is work on that relationship and being together. Now, obviously, if you're in a state that has more rigid homeschooling laws, you want to make sure you have all that worked out before you do that. But yeah, I think the relationship is the biggest thing.
Yeah, no, I love that. And putting that at the center makes so much sense. One of the things that I hear from parents a lot is, I think my kid could really benefit from homeschooling. I just either don't know if I have the bandwidth, or I'm worried about burning out, or I'm worried about managing this all. Any tips when you're chatting with parents, things that you recommend there?
Yeah, for sure. I think having a support system, whether that is close-knit and within your own family or something more outside of the box, like an internet-based support system, I think that is the key, because I think where we get burnt out is when we feel alone, right? Like when we have all of these things happening in our house and in our home and we're trying to manage it all and we feel like we're the only ones that are struggling with it. And I think that is where the burnout piece really gets hard to recover from. But I think when we surround ourselves with other families who have similar things happening, that makes it easier to keep going and push through and adjust our systems. And I think also the mindset shift, right? That we don't have to be exactly like public school, and we can slow down, which in turn, in my opinion, makes us actually grow faster. The ability to stop and pause and work on our relationship and fix the things we need to fix that are burning us out and then start again, I think that is really the biggest key to success.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think especially when PDA is coming in and there's burnout with school and school avoidance and refusal coming into play because of that nervous system dysregulation, giving permission to actually stop and slow down before hopping into what could be another demand, I think is so important.
Yeah. I think that's where you're going to hear this buzzword, de-schooling.
Oh.
So okay. A lot of people will recommend that when you pull from public school, you take time to just be. And that pulls into that relationship piece as well, right? Because not only does your child need to de-school and decompress from the stress that was causing them, but we as parents, many of us probably also went through public school, need to de-school from our mentality that we have to keep up with that pace and that structure. And if I'm being honest, you can keep up with the pace without the structure. And you can do it much faster. So I say that because as a teacher, what would take a week to teach in a regular classroom with 25 kids can take like 20 minutes when you're one-on-one. So you have to really think about that as well and how that shifts for homeschooling.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Another thing that I often hear, obviously there's people that are really big proponents of the public school system, the supports that it provides, particularly in terms of IE, and you have tons of experience here. So what do you recommend or how do you recommend going about this to make sure that your child is getting the supports they need in a homeschool setting that they might have received from school?
Yeah, I think this again is going to be one of those state dependent things, right? Because every state has different approaches to how they allow homeschoolers to engage with this public school system. Speaking from where I am, you can still approach your local public school and ask for an evaluation for special education, and they will do that for you. Obviously, if your child qualifies for services, they'll probably recommend that they start public school, but it's within your rights to deny that, decline that. And then you still have the information that would be on an IEP should they need to go back to public school at any point, and they would have those supports with them. Some places will provide services like speech and occupational therapy to homeschool students, and sometimes they won't. So it's like this weird gray area, right, of what supports you can get from your public school system. But I think you can also get support outside of that with your own, like on private, in the private sector. There are so many SLPs, OTs, everybody, neuropsychs that are all homeschool friendly, right? So there are also ways to get support in that way. Yeah. It's really just which avenue you choose to go.
That makes sense. And to my knowledge, you can correct me if you have different data. I think in any state, someone could ask for the evaluation because they don't know whether you're going to keep your kids homeschooled or not. Like,
right.
I always say use it as like a tool to help you decide and understand what would be in that IEP in order to make sure that you're able to supplement that and decide is homeschooling versus the public school setting a good, like making that decision of which one fits best for your child.
Have you
across any information contrary to that?
No, I haven't. So I think that is, if you're looking to get started because you feel like your child would qualify for services, then definitely you can approach your public school system as early as, yeah, like even where we are, like 2-year-olds are approved for services. So yeah,
that varies by state, whether you fall into early intervention or the actual public school system and all of that. There definitely are nuances. So, and then talk real quick about cyber schooling, how that kind of fits into all of this, or does it, or how do you conceptualize all of that?
You mean online learning?
Online learning, but then like online learning through the school district.
Yeah. Okay. So in Virginia, there is a virtual public school. I don't know that every state has that option, but it would just be virtual learning. So on your computer, but on the public school system's schedule. Okay. I hear from a lot of parents who will opt for that option, but it's still a public school schedule. So you're not able to have that flexibility and freedom, and you're on the computer for the whole day peer learning. So it just reflects the same as public school. So it's not technically homeschooling.
Okay. But then there are probably online curriculums.
Yeah, there's a ton of online curriculums, and there are a ton of groups like OutSchool is a really popular one where you can take enrichment style classes that are more interest-based. So there's a lot of, I've seen some fun like book clubs. If you have kids who have a certain book interest and they're looking to meet with other kids and talk about the book, that OutSchool is a great place to look for that. And then locally outside of the cyberspace, there's often a lot of co-ops or enrichment programs for homeschooling. I'm sure this is like case by case, depending on where your area is, how affluent homeschooling is in your area. But where we are in Northern Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., there's so many options for homeschooling. So that's really awesome as well.
So because I'm thinking this is a podcast for parents of autistic kids and socialization is a big factor coming into play. And I think you could say this across the board with homeschooling, but how do you usually recommend or find that parents go about getting those social interactions with peers?
Yeah. Yeah. For my family, personally, we participate in some cooperative groups. So we meet once a week, the same day every week at the same park, and we play and we do a science or art activity together and just hang out outside. But there are tons of opportunities like that in our area. And I would say to families who are looking for something like that, Facebook is the place to be. Get on Facebook and look for local homeschooling groups in your area, because I guarantee there are some. And if there aren't, then you should start one, because that is the fastest way, I think, to find homeschoolers near you and to create a social group. I will say for us, we've tried a bunch of different kind of groups like that. And we finally, after 3 years, have found a group that has a really solid group of kids for both my son and my daughter. And I think that is a struggle for families with multi-age kids, right? Making sure you're finding groups that fit both kids' needs. But I promise it's out there. It's possible. You just have to do some digging. Enrichment programs are another great one. We have a local enrichment program where they offer classes for an hour at a time. I actually teach one on building your own board games. So that's super fun for me as a teacher to be in that space again with other kids. And then sports. We play sports. We have joined Cub Scouts. I would honestly argue that my kids are as social or more social than their school age public school friends, because they have the ability and flexibility to do those things during the day. Whereas people view school as social, but it's really not a time for kids to engage with each other, because there's so much structure and there's so many things that are adult led happening. And it's not really a free time, except for maybe your 20 minutes of recess to really play and hang out with your friends and socialize.
Yeah. And I think too, one thing that we see a lot is that kids are in school all day, and then doing too many extracurriculars adds to that, like exhaustion and burnout. Mm-hmm. And sometimes by having less demands during the school day, even if they're doing after quote unquote school activities, they might be able to access them in a different way.
Totally. Yeah. I know I feel tired from all the activities as a parent, but I'll fully admit that I am more of an introvert than both of my children. So I do a lot of socializing on their behalf for sure.
I love it. What about the other thing that came to mind is for kids that have identified learning disabilities or areas that they, through the public school system, they might get a tailored curriculum for to help catch them up. How do you often recommend parents navigating that piece?
Yeah, I think if they're looking to use a curriculum, most curriculums have placement tests. And I think that is the best place to start and to write off if it has an age level or a grade level. Like, that's not really what's important, is meeting your kids where they are. And so really leaning into that as a guideline. But also, that's something that I do as a mentor and help parents with, is taking the curriculums they already have and putting in accommodations and modifications to support their learners. I think you can go about it either way. You can modify the curriculums you already have and make them more at your child's level, or you can start with a curriculum that's at your child's level. I think where it gets dicey is when we have older kids who are testing in at a lower level and things are just too juvenile for them in the curriculum. And so that's where I think you want to really lean into modifying more.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Before we dive in to get a little bit more of how you support families, anything else coming to mind for you in this homeschooling conversation that you feel like are important elements that parents know?
Oh man, I think it's just really important. I feel like this is such a broad,
I could go on
forever and ever.
But I also love to open it up, because sometimes you might be thinking of something, a question I haven't asked, but it is hard.
Yeah, no, I think the most important things for parents who are thinking about homeschooling is to first check your state guidelines and think about how that comes into play for you and your family and your current rhythm, routine, schedule. And then I would think about how, just visualize how your life would be if you were home with your kids and how they would learn with you and what that looks like. And if that makes your heart happy, then I think you know your answer, right? You know how to proceed. But I think there are so many resources and tools out there to support different styles of learning and different levels of learning and different accommodations. And that is something that, like, I really strive to do, is to connect people with those tools and supports.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, yeah, just recognizing this isn't a one size fits all approach.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm even, we don't have time to go here, but even thinking, like, I do know of some families that have found non-traditional kind of school settings where it was like parents come together and they're hiring like a former teacher, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
To do the curriculum or to do the homeschooling too. So
yeah,
there's so many different options.
For sure.
And yeah, I think, I don't know, do you feel like the homeschooling industry shifted with the pandemic itself, or is it just more people are aware about it because of the pandemic?
I do think more people have seen the flexibility and ability to meet their kids' needs in a different way because of the pandemic that maybe they wouldn't have explored if that had never happened, right? If they'd never been forced to homeschool their kids or home educate or see what it was like for them at home. But I don't know. I think the statistics now are showing that there is definitely an increase in homeschooling families in the U.S. I don't know that I could speak to worldwide what that looks like, but here in the U.S., for sure, there's definitely been an increase in homeschooling since the pandemic.
Yeah, very awesome. Okay, so tell us a little bit about how then, you've hinted at it, but how you support families, if parents are looking forward to connecting with you, what that could look like as well.
Yeah, so I support families in a lot of different ways, actually. If you're a local Virginia family, I am supporting through homeschool evaluations in Virginia. That is one of the end of year proof of progress options. So I offer portfolio style homeschool evaluations for Virginia homeschoolers. And then just for everyone else in the US and beyond, honestly, I offer support with what we were just talking about, breaking down our curriculums and adding in accommodations and modifications, just like a homeschool kind of mentor session where we break down your family's needs and work together to come up with a plan for your family. And then I also have a monthly membership that I run that is more of a play-based learning focus, more leaning into that game schooling kind of style of learning, where every month I provide a printable play pack for different age levels. So age levels from toddlers through adults and different learning styles. And I provide games and resources and ideas based on a curated theme each month that you can use with your family. I ask for members to submit skills that they're working on so that the activities are targeted totally to what they're doing in their home and what we're doing in our own personal homeschool often comes up in there. This past month, I created a board game that was multiplication and subitizing based so that I could play with both my 9-year-old and my 4-year-old and we could have a good time with a board game and work on our individualized math skills. So that is something that I really love to do. We also pull in a guest expert every month and have coffee chat Q&As every month. So there's lots of fun things and support happening in the Play to Learn Homeschool Hub as well.
Yeah, sounds amazing. I love it so much. And if parents want to connect with you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can find me on the web at maliaphelpswaller.com or on Instagram and Facebook at Malia Phelps Waller Homeschool.
Okay, awesome, awesome. And you mentioned before we hit record, you said you do have a free guide. Talk
yes.
about that real quick.
So I have a homeschool toolbox, and inside the toolbox, you have a curated list of things you might want to think about if you're thinking about getting started with homeschooling. So it's the steps to getting started. And then also a playful learning toolkit. So it walks through different learning styles and different activities you can do with your kids based on their unique learning style.
Okay, that's awesome. We will link that in the show notes. And yeah, I think that's a wrap, Malia. Thank you so much for being here today.
I had so much fun talking to you. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours just about everything.
We could. We absolutely could. Thank you so much. I know this is going to be a valuable resource for families that have been debating or already, I think also for families who are homeschooling and just need some of that validation of, yeah, you're on the right track. And
yeah,
this can be such a beneficial way for your child to learn as well.
Yes, so. Totally.
All right.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you. That is a wrap for today's episode of Evolve with Dr. Tay. I will see you back here next time.
Before we wrap up this episode, for real this time, I want to share a couple ways you can get even more value and what your next steps could be. First, join the Evolve Facebook group. We do Q&As about the episodes and so much more. I linked that group, my personal social media pages, and any resources I mentioned in this episode in the show notes. So scroll down now and join me online. When you submit questions on any of my pages, your question could be featured on this podcast. How cool is that? I love being able to speak on topics that feel directly relevant to your life. Your questions truly make a difference in the content we create here. One last thing, do your fellow autism parents a favor. Share this episode on your social media and tag me. Autism currently affects 1 in 36 families in the United States and many more worldwide. So I'm sure there is a parent in your social media followers that could be served by this podcast. Thank you again for being here, and I'm so grateful we shared this time together. Bye, y'all.